Christopher Cabaldon was first elected mayor of West Sacramento in 1998. He returned to private life after an unsuccessful bid for re-election. Former Mayor Cabaldon joins us today to reflect on his tenure and his thoughts about the future of West Sacramento. Mayor Cabaldon, what happened in the last election?
Well, what didn't happen in the last election? The 2020, I mean, it's already a cliche, but everything about 2020 was a challenge, but also unprecedented. In fact, we kept looking backwards to precedented times, and the same thing was true all year long during the election. So I think as the year was going forward, as March rolled around, my intention had been to exit, to conclude a long term of service, one of the longest serving mayors in the country. But as the crisis took hold, the triple crisis of the pandemic and the economy and economic consequences of the pandemic and our response and the racial justice crisis as well, it was clear in July and August that you just don't walk away from your community after a long term of service in the middle of a crisis. And so I ran for re-election again, but knowing that this year was going to be different, that I couldn't campaign in September, October, November, like, hey, look at me, look at all the wonderful things. You look at this great new project. Hey, there's a new coffee shop, right? You can't do that when you're trying to manage a pandemic and when you're trying to persuade everyone of the seriousness of the crisis, folks across the political spectrum to comply with the health orders, to heal a community, to hold it together, is a very difficult time. And so, I think actually in the entire SACOG region, six counties of SACOG plus San Joaquin, not a single mayor was reelected. But I think for the right reasons, we all had to step up and lead in a public health crisis, which is not usually, that's not the best way to manage politics, but it was the right thing to do for the health and safety of our communities.
You know, that observation about the mayors within the region not being reelected is interesting. I have not heard that before. I wanted to ask you, you've got such a reputation as a problem solver and an innovator. And frankly, West Sacramento is known as the city that works, where it is that you can get stuff done. Where do you think, beyond just the management of the extreme conditions we were in, there was a bit of a delta? Because for many within the region, your leadership was looked at as an example of how to lead a city right. Where was the disconnect with the public on this?
Well, I got more votes this time than I have in any other election in the past, right? So it wasn't a change of people's minds so much as, a lot of folks voted this time who hadn't voted previously. And we sometimes think of folks who don't vote as this like great reserve of progressive values. Like if they would just come out but vote, we would get a higher minimum wage and universal health care and all of that. But particularly this year, we saw a lot of voters inspired by the president who were just angry. And voters who weren't angry, but were frustrated and didn't know what to do and trying to cope with crises after crises in their own lives. So what you say about West Sacramento is true. I would say it's largely true about Stockton also. And my colleague and friend Michael Tubbs also sort of unexpectedly not reelected in his community as well. And we saw this all over the place, in California in particular, where just the nature and the mood of the electorate wasn't focused on how is my city doing. It was this sense of frustration and malaise and anger and can't we just get this under control? And government, would you please stop telling us what to do? And government, would you please solve this crisis all at once? Right? It was all of that happening at the same time, and given that we were all occupied with managing and leading through the crisis, I think getting down and dirty, rolling up your sleeves, and fighting and in a bloody, muddy battle in politics just wasn't the right. It wasn't the right tone for 2020.
Okay. Well, instead of talking about 2020, let's go backwards a bit. Take us back to when you first became mayor. What was West Sacramento like back then compared to 2021?
Well, it physically it was dramatically different. We were about half the size we are today in terms of population. And most of those folks are still here. All of us that lived here back then are still in town, but a lot more folks decided that West Sacramento was a place that they wanted to live or to come home to. after joining the military or going to college or what have you. So we're much larger than we were before. But also, I wish we could take a walk through West Sacramento today. You cannot go a block or two and not see the physical transformation of the city. The opening up of the waterfront, the creation of a new downtown, neighborhood after neighborhood after neighborhood, affordable housing like we were never building before, just like physical changes all over the place. Of course, Raleigh Field Center Health Park and many others, a new college that was built, were physically transformed. I guess, so for me, the other thing about that time was that we didn't have a high opinion of what was possible for West Sacramento. And that was partly reinforced by, pretty much everybody else in the region thought West Sacramento was an armpit. And they're like, don't go there after dark. And nobody thought, people either didn't know we existed or didn't believe in us. And after a century of possibility and potential, after a century, you kind of like, well, what's wrong with me? If I have all this potential and I'm not delivering on it, there was a sense of desperation is not quite the right word, but a sense that, you know what, we're a working class industrial, low to middle income town, and things aren't great. They're not perfect, but they're good enough. There's no point in dreaming bigger. And so our community had just incorporated in 1987 as a city, with the hopes of getting our water cleaner and improving the quality of our police department, maybe getting a downtown, maybe opening up a little bit of the waterfront. But our ambition as a community about what we could become was radically different back then.
When you think about all of the change that's come to West Sacramento, and you reference the waterfront, the new downtown, the Bridge District, signature buildings like the CalSTRS building, and all that, out of all those projects, great and small, which one of those, or ones that I didn't mention, was your toughest but most satisfying achievement?
I think it's got to be Sutter Health Park or Raleigh Field. In some ways, maybe not the hardest over the course of everything, but it was the key to unlocking everything else. I became mayor in 1998. Back then, the citizens didn't elect the mayor. I was elected to the city council, and the city council elected the mayor back then. And just for convenience, the council would just rotate it, right? We don't want to have to make choices among each other, so we'll just rotate it. So 1998, it wasn't that there was a groundswell of people saying, hey, we want Christopher Cabaldon as our mayor. It was, oh, it's your turn, your turn in the rotation. And a couple of guys had this crazy idea of building a minor league baseball stadium in West Sacramento. They came to meet with one day. They didn't have any land. They didn't have a team. They didn't have any money. One was like selling cell phone contracts. The other one, had a family legacy in minor league baseball, but that was it. And that project was impossible, right? We didn't have a penny to our name in West Sacramento to help to put something together. We didn't have a land, we had nothing. And we pulled that project off, and it was a huge lever of change. For all those other physical changes, it made us look at issues and say, hey, that crack house has been across the street from the park for forever. And we've always thought, well, you just can't do anything about that. Well, we just shocked the region and built the $45 million minor league ballpark. If we could do that, surely we could take care of that crack house. And what about the fact that most second graders can't read at grade level? Surely we could take on that if we just did the ballpark. So for me, the ballpark was a major, major step forward, because it caused us to realize, hey, we could partner with others in the region, that we could do big things, and that we were capable of it. We just had to get to work and roll up our sleeves. And that, in some sense, was more important than the physical change. It changed our psychology and our mindset in the city, that if we applied ourselves, if we made, if we did the hard work and we made the tough choices and took some chances, that we could really get something done. And that has built on itself ever since, all around the city and every other corner as well.
Some of your biggest fans come from the business community, which typically is seen as being pretty critical of what would be considered progressive leadership, if I can put a label on it. And yet you seem to have high support from the business community. And I'm curious, what is it that you and your colleagues in West Sacramento have done differently to give yourselves a reputation as a place to innovate or get things done when many other cities that have, frankly, no offense, far more resources than West Sacramento have struggled.
I actually think, in some extent, the answer is embedded in your question, and it's that last part of what you just said, was that, we're not Land Park, we're not Davis, and we're not Roseville. We don't have any, we have no natural economic advantages. You know, we have a beautiful river, access to the causeway, we've got all kinds of assets, but among them have never been great wealth. And that has meant that we had to, where are our bootstraps? We got to make this thing work, and we can't do it alone. When I got elected, I'm like, I wasn't running as a business candidate. I'm like, I want to open up a college here. I want to fix our transit service and create real mobility. And then I started to realize it all costs money. It all costs money. So how do we do that? And found progressive business leaders and others that wanted to help on those projects, but also realized that in a city like ours, we just had to create economic opportunity. And growth and jobs. And so we have done that. And turning back to the ballpark example, because it was one key insight of that was we cut the deal on that ballpark. I was elected in 1998 December as mayor. The ballpark opened in April of 2000. So we made the deal for the ballpark in about April or May, I think, of 1999. It was open in 1 year later. That's incredible. I mean, it's hard to like get an addition to your house built in any city in 1 year. But we built this entire thing. And the project that came next was IKEA. And Sacramento and others were like, we'll give IKEA, we'll give you $10 million. We'll give you $25 million to locate in our cities. And I looked at our budget and said, well, I can't even give you $500,000, much less $10 million. But I'll tell you what, IKEA, we could get you open 1 or 2 years faster than anyone else can. And IKEA said, well, look, that we could make $10 million in a year easily. We'd make that hundreds of times over in a year. So they came here. They chose West Sacramento. That was the second project after Raley Field that said, yeah, Raley Field wasn't a fluke. The ballpark wasn't a fluke. This is a new vibe in West Sacramento. And it taught me that figuring out how to make economic opportunity and economic expansion happen, partnering with different kinds of folks in the business community, you could really leverage significant change. And that's paid off in terms of our initiatives around micro transit and micro mobility and transit reform. It's paid off definitely in our West Sacramento Home Run program that you and I spoke about before, radically changing economic and educational opportunity in the city. And so the marriage of economic expansion and growth with progressive ideals and progress and really league leading initiatives has been kind of the hallmark of West Sacramento over the last 20 years.
We talk about those steps along the way. I'm curious, how are you different than you were back in 1998?
Oh my gosh, it's an easier question would be how am I the same, which is hardly at all. In 1998, I was working as a staffer in the state capitol, or I was just leaving the capitol. Young guy who ran for city council to like just fix some stuff, and then get back to my real calling, which is to work on the glorious things. I wanted to work on foreign policy and saving the coast and things like that, not sewers and potholes and stuff like that. But I was going to work on that for a little bit, but I was going to get back to that. And I realized working in the city was that this is where real change happens. I mean, with no offense to, U.S. senators and California state assembly members, it is in communities, at least communities like mine that aren't finished yet, where you have the possibility of dramatically, profoundly changing people's opportunities and their lives, their sense of power, their sense of possibility. So I fell in love with the ability to really make a legitimate impact and not just do it yourself, but to engage people in doing that, which was not me before. I think I also started to become a little bit more outgoing. I'm a policy wonk by nature. I'm a behind the scenes, legislative aide. That's what I was when I first got elected to city council. And I had to find a different part of me that could handle the crab feeds and shake hands and kiss babies and give the speeches and all of that. I never trained to be the mayor of West Sacramento. And then the last one, which is probably the most, in some ways the most obvious now, but the most, the deepest one, which is that I was in the closet. I had grown up, in the early 90s, maybe late 80s, started to realize that this feeling that I was different from everybody else, had a name and that I was gay. But I also had, I'd been watching years and years and years of every time there was somebody gay that had politics, somebody would step up to a podium, hi, I'm so-and-so, I'm the mayor or the senator for this city or this town. And, sweat would be, coming down their face, and they would announce that, I need to make an announcement, and I'm gay. And then always right after would be, and I'm resigning effective, next Thursday or something, that it was clear that you just couldn't be that part of me that was like essential to, at the essence of my DNA, I couldn't be that and be in politics. And so I chose politics. I want to make a difference. And the having a personal life isn't going to be a part of that. In 2006, I came out of the closet, and I was with great fear. And that journey that my city and I have been on together, of growth and change, has dramatically changed me. So I'm in some ways a completely different person than I was, as different as I was then, compared to as different WSAC is now compared to then.
When you did come out, how did your city receive you?
It was the whole spectrum, right? So when I first came out, I was worried that there would be people like camped out of my house, because it's a small town, everybody knows where you live, with picket signs or torches or you don't know, because you've never seen it happen before without it resulting in something horrible. And the response was, the night that I did it in my State of the City address, the response in the room was overwhelming and positive. I was just in tears. Everyone was in tears pretty much for that evening. But that's the folks from the Chamber of Commerce and from the Rotary Club and others. And the real test was going to be the next day. And the next day, a bunch of the TV news folks went out. They went to Carol's restaurant, my favorite diner in town. And they were talking to folks, and hey, Mr. and Mrs., so-and-so, there's an 80-year-old couple, and so your mayor just said he's gay. What do you think about that? And their answers from the, I remember those clips, because they were pretty typical of the mail I was getting, too, were things like, well, I don't like that. I don't believe in that. But you know what? He does a good job, and we let's give him a chance. And so that was the center of the spectrum. There were certainly lots of folks who were like, thank you for doing this. And I work for the city, and I've never come out myself. I have wanted to move home to West Sacramento, but I didn't feel safe there. Right. So there was all of those reactions, as well as folks, sending me, nasty grams and other sorts of things. So the full spectrum. Then I was on the ballot just a few months later, November of that year. And I won by the largest margin ever for reelection. And so my experience, I should say 2 years later, I won again. I was reelected by a large margin, at the same year that my voters here in West Sacramento voted for Proposition 8. So it's an example of how it's not so simple. It's not some inevitable, set of problems. Like suddenly there's an awakening and everybody changes. In 2008, voters in West Sacramento said, we love our gay mayor and we don't think he should be able to get married. And we want that in the Constitution. And so part of what I've appreciated in this role is the chance to be a part of people's journeys and to help lead and push them along. For a lot of folks in my community, for much of that time, I was the only gay person that they realized that they knew, and helped them to become more accepting and then supportive over the years as well.
You talk about the journey that people go on and that your community is in. We are on a journey right now as a nation. How would you describe the moment we're in?
We're in so many overlapping moments at one time, but I think we have seen very plainly who we don't want to be in a lot of contexts. And I think that we're maybe more open than we have been in the past to thinking about what we should be. And beyond our own bubbles and our own opinions, but seeing, I think more of us are seeing all the other people in a democracy. And I was in a conversation earlier today about civics education, and folks say we need to get back to having civics education. I think, well, I don't think that's really, the problem isn't that we don't have content knowledge, right? There are plenty of folks who are like storming the Capitol with guns, who are quoting the Federalist Papers. They know what the Second Amendment is, right? It's not that they don't know. It's not that we don't know as a people. It's that democracy is it's a lot of fighting. I mean, by nature, right? It's in every healthy democracy, there is a lot of battling, and mostly most of us most of the time lose those arguments in a democracy. But we had come to a point where we don't know how. We don't know how to lose and persevere, and we don't know how to lose with grace. We don't know how to tell the difference. And both 2020 and 2021 have underscored that. And so watching this transition is giving us, you know, such a welcome opportunity to reset as a people. And at least I'm hopeful, you know, that has finally arrived.
If you have studied politics and civic change for so long and been a lead actor in all of that as well, if you could sit down the leadership of this country on both sides of the political aisle and give them any advice whatsoever to move forward, to help us move forward as a nation, what would it be?
I would advise folks, especially in DC, the leadership of the country, the parties and others, you know, maybe to take a sabbatical as a mayor for a little while. And not because we know something different about the issues, but there is something fundamental about, you know, going to the grocery store and picking up some eggs and some milk, and everyone there is, you know, you're fair game. And what you realize when you're the mayor is, or in local office more generally, is that the world is not divided into two tribes of good and evil people, right? Let's turn back to 2008, the folks that were campaigning against my right to marry, you know, who in my own community, you know, they'd have a lawn sign up for that. I'll tell you, some of those folks were exactly the people I needed on my side when we were trying to get an affordable housing apartment building built on a corner when a bunch of NIMBYs were saying no. And some of those NIMBYs were, you know, very strong LGBT rights activists later on. And what you discover, what you learn is, in some sense, which most Americans know from the Thanksgiving table and more from the family table, is that there are different perspectives, and we're still going to be here next year for Thanksgiving. We're still, as a mayor, you know, Scott, we may be fighting to the death on some issue today. And it's not about just being civil and nice. It's not about forgetting, but we might be critical allies tomorrow. That's how that's the only way a democracy can function. And where we are at today with our national leadership is most of them are so disconnected or forgotten that connection between that we are constantly changing, and that every one of us has the possibility of being an ally tomorrow or maybe the next day, as long as we don't cut each other off.
As we move to our last few minutes, I want to ask you very quickly, what do you consider to be the major challenges that we as a region, because you've done so much in terms of regional cooperation, what is it that we as a region must confront?
Well, I mean, we still have many of the issues that we've been challenged with over the last decade or two are still there, right? So we it's not that we haven't won the battle against sprawling land use development, and in fact, all that we've learned is that smarter land use, smarter land recycling, and the concentration of resources in existing urban areas is not just a powerful environmental strategy, but it's really important for economic development, for social cohesion, for justice, for all of those things. So it's become even more important, and certainly the pandemic has highlighted that. So the policy agenda is still right there in front of us. We've made progress. We're a national leader in that space in Sacramento. But the other dimension to it, I would just add, is that in Sacramento, we often get very self-congratulatory about how collaborative we are and all the things that we have done in the past to work together and our networks and all of that. And we are becoming a much more potent region. We're growing, we're becoming more powerful, wealthier in many ways, and our problems are becoming even more challenging. And that kind of approach of regular collaboration may not scale to the level that we're going, and we're gonna have to keep reinventing our ways of engaging solutions on those problems as well.
Well, talking about reinvention, what's next for Christopher Cabaldon?
Right now, I'm trying to sleep. You know, it's I've spent almost my entire adult life as either mayor or city council member in West Sacramento, and I've been running at 100 miles an hour. It's been the purpose of a lifetime to be able to do it. It's been extraordinary. But I have the next half of my life now to figure out. So I'm looking at some opportunities and some possibilities, but also trying to force myself to relax a little bit, to play a game, to read a book, and probably most importantly, to finally be able to have conversations with my friends that last more than 12 minutes, but to really deeply engage in unimportant things that in some sense are the most important food for the soul.
They most certainly are. Mayor Cabaldon, Christopher, thank you so much for your service, and we look forward to seeing what's next for Christopher Cabaldon.
Thank you, Scott.
All right. And that's our show. Thanks to our guests, and thanks to you for watching Studio Sacramento. I'm Scott Syphax. See you next time right here on KBIE.
Thank you for listening to Studio Sacramento from KBIE Public Television. If you've enjoyed this podcast, please leave us a review on iTunes to help others find it.
All episodes of Studio Sacramento, along with other KVIE programs, are available to watch online at kvie.org/video.